Today is Sunday, October 30th, and we're here with the start of a Jerusalem winter, but we can't complain compared to what's happening in the eastern seaboard and the snow they had all over Shabbat. It's a sad day today, as you all know, and I learned this morning or midday, Rabbi Benny Eisner died. They tell me at the time everyone was singing L'chadodi, his soul departed. And I taught with him in many different schools. I taught with him in BMT, I believe Machon Gold, Midreshet Moriah for sure. And of course, we share the same building with Torah Shraga. And what I can tell you about Benny Eisner, something very unique about him. I spoke about this at the book launch at the Great Synagogue, the whole question of adjustment to a new culture. If you recall, I spoke about the tragedy of the Hitler period and Rebbeim who were uprooted and suddenly placed in a Western world, a totally different culture, milieu, from A to Z. And we who came in Aliyah faced that challenge to a certain degree, but we chose to come and we were prepared for it. In my case, I certainly have dual culture. What was amazing about Rabbi Benny Eisner is no one I know like him who was born and bred Israeli, went to Merkaz Harav, never studied in America. And he had such a rapport with the American students, with the Anglo students. They loved him, period. Boys, girls, he had a way to reach their hearts. And if you want proof, I don't know of many other rebbeim who many times were called back to America, their trips paid for, l'sadeh kedushin, when their student got married. And that's a tremendous tribute to Rabbi Eisner. And I grievously mourn his loss, and I dedicate the shiur today in his memory. Now, to begin with, I want to mention that I was zeicha to make a siyum on a few sfarim these last few days. Among them, the masterpiece of Rabbi Chaim Sabato interviewing Rabbi Lichtenstein, Mevakshei Panecha. And I want to quote one part of the book because it fits right in with what we said in class. And here you have two giants discussing the very same topic that a little guy like Aaron Rakefet raised in the class. And what I'm referring to is, you know, sometimes we're going to make statements and we take them out of context and people are going to get very upset. And I cautioned you when we talk about husband and wife and man and woman and who follows whom, at times you're going to find this statement which the feminist will be very, that they'll go into orbit. They'll be in a rage if they hear what you're quoting. But you understand, happiness is a function of one's society, one's upbringing, one's environment, one's values. I can tell you very simply that many times we spoke about in the classes where I taught women, you remember, I don't want to go redo what I did here in class, but you know, men were married to three wives, four wives. I think I told you the story. The Sutton family, the Sitton family, we were once discussing relatives, and they had thousands and thousands of first cousins and second cousins and third cousins. And the reason why is very simple. Their grandparents had two wives, three wives. So of course, Daniel Lowenstein is starting to shake. Three wives, you know, he's happy, but what will the girl, are you married, Daniel? So your wife, here's three, she'll smack his face tonight. You went to Rakefet's class to be brainwashed that three wives is a good thing. So I made the point, and it's a very important point, that when you live in a society where a man has three wives, the women were very happy. This was what they were accustomed to. This is what they understood. And there were many benefits to three wives. One gave birth, the other one took over, they shared. And you know, running a house is not an easy matter. and ironing and washing and cooking and preparing, and this was their lifestyle. Am I saying it's good for us today? Absolutely not. We're living in a different world today. Women have different expectations, and men have different expectations. It's a different concept of marriage to a certain degree. And it's not that I'm advocating it, but I don't want you to be supercilious or haughty and you say, gee, I'm better than my great-grandfather who had three wives. I don't know if you have a right to make that statement. Now, in the book, Mavakshei Panecha, pages 62 and 63, and I have to tell you what's amazing about this volume. All of you know Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. He is one of the giants of the generation, okay? He's very profound. And I have a son-in-law. Whenever I would ask people if they heard my son-in-law speak, Reb Chaim, they tell me he's very profound. Wow. I know what that meant was they didn't understand one word. Rakefet, I don't know, I could drive you crazy and show off knowledge, but what would I accomplish? I learned from the Rav. When you teach, you have to take a theme and hit at it. As the Rav used to say, the difference between myself and the Baron Cutler is the Baron Cutler teaches the few Iluim that come to Lakewood. I want to teach everyone. So there's an act of teaching everyone. Rabbi Aaron, you understand that only the top can comprehend him. He's always very deep. What's beautiful about this book is that Rav Sabato, pardon me, brings him down to earth. Netanyahu, he makes him so intelligible, it is a pleasure. And as I told Rabbi Bednash, I told the Rabbi Asaf, I have a Yetzer Hara to take this book and turn it into a year course with my comments on it, because I know what they're driving at and I want to make it a lot, go down deep. And now on pages 62, 63, they raise essentially the same issue. Rabbi Rubin, how many years have you heard Pashas Mishpatim? How many years have you heard about Eved Ivri and Nomar Vriya and Shivcha Kananit and Eved Kanani and Shein Va'ayin and the Sugyas in Kedushin? Tell me, aren't you a little embarrassed as a modern, labriyot, sophisticated person? We have slavery in the Torah. See, they raised the same issue. But I want to tell you, at that time, the whole world had slavery. Our concept of slavery was unbelievable. Remember what the Gemara says in Kedushin, Kol HaKona Eved, Kona Adam La'atzmo. If you buy one beautiful pillow, you have to give it to the slave. You can't sleep on it. So you see, a concept has to be understood in its social, economic, historic, psychological milieu and background. It's not that I advocate slavery, but a guy would be a moron. And by the way, I have to tell you, I've reached the conclusion that the computer, the internet, brings all the morons of the world together. If you read the comments that they send in, I tell you, it's beyond comprehension how people speak that way, write that way, and aren't ashamed to publicize all their curse words and all their stupidity, and for me as a Litvak, all their amharatzot. And if anyone would say, I hate the Torah, it talks about slavery, how terrible, how primitive, that moron, one of the entertainers in Israel, he's of American origins, well, I forget his name, I don't want to mention his name, he was just interviewed, he's celebrating at least 30 years of performing here, what he had to say about the Torah, they should take his tongue out and wash it with lye. But the way he spoke, sure, but understand what Torah is about. Now I come back to Rakepit's lectures many years ago, right here in the Kollel, and in many other moments in life. Remember, the Torah had to be given at a certain moment in time. It's impossible to write in the Torah about computers. For one simple reason, computers didn't exist, cars didn't exist, our whole modern lifestyle didn't exist. Who knows what will be 500 years from now? And that's why we have a Torah Shabbat Peh. The Torah Shabbat Peh gives you the principles so that you can answer all the questions. This is the halachic process. But chas v'chalila, we should criticize the Torah, which was given 3,500 years ago when people lived a certain way. And this is the context in which the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the Torah. He couldn't give a Torah that people would not understand. And this is what essentially Rav Aaron and Rav Sabato say here, and it echoes what I said in class. And you got to be careful. I gave you the example, and I stand on that example. Rabbi Rubin differed with me, but I stand on what I said. That when Rabbi Shechter said even a monkey can write a ketuvah, what he was trying to say was Maisa Kof. We have an expression like that in Chazal, and we have an expression like that in rabbinic literature. But what Maisa Kof means, it doesn't need a lishma, it doesn't need a certain sacredness, it doesn't need a certain kavana. A ketuvah is not a get. And Reb Heschel's absolutely right. For Haraya, I can tell you, I give you a simple example. I lived this story. I was at a wedding of someone, Rabbi Chaim Gold. So Chaim Gold was a character. He didn't use a normal ketuvah. He used a gong, a ketav yad of the gong. So fine, he wrote out a ketuvah, ketav yad, beautiful, fine, good. And I was a witness on the ketuvah and Rabbi Yehuda Panis. If you recognize the name, right? He teaches at the Lander today, he then was at YU. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik was Masada Kedushin. In the middle of the meal, and you got to have known Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, he was very effervescent, very exuberant. And in the middle of the meal, someone comes up to him, Rebbe, I think there was a mistake. I heard the ketuvah read, and it was instead of sheshmayot, instead of shvamayot, chamesh talafim shvamayot, it was sheshmayot. Do you remember this, Yitzchak? You don't even remember it. And Rav Aaron said, bring me the ketuvah, bring me the ketuvah. And he takes a look at the ketuvah. He copied over from a text that had the date 100 years earlier. And now the problem is, what do you do? The Chatan Kala can't be together. She needs a ketuvah. All right, Rav Aaron went into a whole pupil afterwards. That even if the ketuvah had the wrong date, nevertheless, the Kabbalat Kinyan, we were witnesses, it would be enough that they could be together. I don't know if Rabbi was right or wrong, but it's a fascinating question. So now we're looking for ketuvah. This is Sunday night, the wedding, Sunday night, and it must be 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Where do you find a store with a ketuvah? So in desperation, they went in. It was the Broadway. Am I right? The Broadway Central Hotel. Do you remember? You don't even remember that. It was his sister's wedding. That's why Aleha Shalom. She died young. A great, great lady. So Rav Aaron goes into the office and he asks the caterer. Caterer pulls open his desk drawer and he has some garbage ketuvah that people threw away. One of them was not filled in. We pulled it out of the desk drawer. Here, Chaim Gold had planned this unique ketuvah, Nusach Hagra, with all the chumras and all the diyukim. And here they took a ketuvah out of the drawer, a garnish. But that's a ketuvah, it's not a get. And that's what Rav Heschel meant. But when women heard it, they, you know what went on? They accused him of saying that women are no different than monkeys. And it was unfair, but you got to be careful what you say and why you had a Rabbi Branda came out and then explained like we read about it in Chazal, that every Amora had, what's the word they use, not a dashan, there's a word for it, someone who stood on top of the Amora and explained his words to the Kahal. So Rabbi Branda explained his words. Okay, now, this problem, we're going to see some very interesting material today. Yeah, Yoni.
And you make that claim that the Torah was given in a specific society at a specific time in history.
It had, yeah, there's no other choice.
So where do you draw the line? Some people will continue that claim today and say,
So that's why you have a Torah.
So Yoni.
That's why you have a Torah Shabbat Peh. That's number one, which gives you the ability to decide whether you can use an automatic elevator on Shabbos or not. It gives you the ability to decide whether the Tzomet products are good. It gives you the ability to deal with koshering massive equipment. It gives you the ability to make a kosher affair, perhaps, in the Waldorf Astoria, which I personally am opposed. You should know I'm machmir. I've been inside the kitchens. But be it as it may, Rabbi Kotler was matir, and so many good caterers do it. You understand? Now, along with that, I take you back to Rakhefet's talk at the Great Synagogue. Remember the talk on Mesorah? Remember my talk had two parts? Mesorah was the first part. So Torah works. This is Torah Shabbat Pan. Go back to my lectures. Listen to them. I can't repeat them now. But this is why it's so important to have a live connection with the earlier generation. Okay? But you're right. People who want to throw it away will say exactly that. So you have to say to them, well, how did you want God to give the Torah? How can he talk about computers? How can he talk about cars? How can he talk about spaceships? Follow me? How can you talk about Alaska and how do you daven Mincha and Shacharis and Mariv when there's no sunset or sunrise? How do you deal with the white nights in Leningrad? The first trip of the pre-Yitzchak, okay? Endless. I was just in Seattle. Shabbat ends there at 10 o'clock at night during the summer. I couldn't believe it. 6 o'clock, I gave this major talk. After the talk, they daven Mincha, hundreds of people. Then everyone goes home and has sudash lishit that does whatever they want, and you come back a 9:45 for Marv. You follow? So you get and that's good already compared to Leningrad. You go to sleep, you make up double the next morning. So okay, I dealt with it. Find those lectures. It's the first lectures I gave after I left the history of Torah in modern times. Now. So the first one to deal with this is Tash Bates, and he makes the analogy which essentially all the Achronim will later accept, that it's like a din of kahuna. You marry a man, you become a kohenet, if he is a kohen. The husband dies, if there were no children, she goes back to her father's house, her father's menhagim, and if there are children, she remains a kohenet. And we have to have peace. We can't have two different worlds under one roof. Many of you are married, and you all know, if you listen to Rakepit's lectures on marriage, I just got a tremendous compliment from someone who's divorced. And I was laughing because I gave those lectures years ago, and he picked up finally on some of the lectures, and he complimented me. I said, "Ay, how are you? Every chatan bakala should hear those lectures." But certainly in working out a marriage, there is one crucial word, the hardest word of all for a Western person to accept, compromise. Of course, we grow up in self-centered, Baruch Hashem, what a beautiful world we live in. I can eat whatever I want from the freezer into the microwave. I can decide 1 minute before I sit down to eat what I want to eat. You don't appreciate the world. You don't. And years ago, if you forgot to defrost something for Shabbos, you were stuck. Today, you forgot to defrost something into the microwave. 20 minutes later, it's 10 minutes later. It's fresh. It's defrosted. It's fabulous. What a world. We have our own cars, our own bedrooms, our own beds, etc. That is the worst trait to bring into marriage, because you're two different people, two different individuals. You both have been cuddled by life, and here you have to live under one roof. And halacha kama v'kama, when it comes to Dvar Hashem zu halacha, we follow the husband, and that's what the Tashbeis paskin. Now, I showed you afterwards from the Sefer Admat Kodesh, where the same question comes up with Pesach. And what was fascinating about this tshuva is that you see two major reasons why we don't eat legumes on Pesach. And you see, this is a problem. None of us know for sure why we can't eat legumes on Pesach. But if you ask me, after having cleaned some many kilo of rice in Tzvah Hagenah Yisrael before Pesach, and the joker is today, they don't eat rice on Pesach. I don't know why the army abolished it. Because if you clean it and cook it before and put it into the major freezers in the army kitchens, there's no shayla, it's batel b'shishim. But from what I saw, the reason we don't eat rice, the reason that I think it is that if you go to fields where rice grows, there's always other grain being blown around. And willy-nilly, the grain can get into the rice. And if you cook it on Pesach, even though it's one in a thousand, but chametz is b'mashehu on Pesach. So here too he says the wife has to follow the husband. And if he eats rice, she eats rice. If he doesn't eat rice, she can't eat rice anymore. Reb Chaim Palachi, I showed you from the Moed L'Kol Chai that 100% the man's custom wins out, and the woman has to follow him. But he goes into a whole discourse about being very careful to clean the rice before Pesach and to clean it three times. Kol hamaber harezim mishubach. And I can remember, this is something none of you can identify with. When I came in Aliyah, Katamon was a Sephardic neighborhood run down. Today, Katamon, Gonaim, is the center of the world. Every Anglo, every Frenchman wants to live in Katamon. Homes go for a fortune. I just was told a certain apartment that's built a half block from Katamon, they only want $3 million is the asking price for the apartment. I tried to, a Talmud of mine interested, but I sent two Talmudim there already, but it's beyond $3 million. All right, they'll come down a little. But if you begin with $3 million, how much do you come down? But Malk and I both remember in Katamon, the Sfardiyot, the Majalas, sitting on the ledge before Pesach, cleaning rice, exactly like we did in the army, spreading a white cloth and pushing the rice, pushing it down, looking and looking, and the minute you find anything black, you pull it out. Okay, now let me go further, and you'll see here a shaila you never dreamt about. It comes up, and by the way, this sefer already was published in 1940. We're coming into more modern times. I'm quoting to you, these are rare sfarim. I was able to get at them through my neighbor, Rabbi Yoshua Huttner, the library of the Encyclopedia Talmudica. He was kind enough, the Lech Tzadik Levracha, he would lend me sfarim and I could Xerox. And also I might mention the Mankal Klali, the Manal Klali there was Harav Aaron Batz, Lech Tzadik Levracha, and he was my neighbor, and at times he Xeroxed for me. Hashemayim HaKadashim, I'm quoting from Or Chaim, I'm quoting from page Tet Vav. The author is Reb Moshe Toledano, the famous Toledano family, but here he's quoting his son wrote the tshuva, Reb Yosef Toledano. And the Toledano family, you recognize, they were very big rabbanim in Israel. They're probably still are Toledanos today from this family. Now, what's the question here? It's Kufnun. Question Kufnun on page Tetvav Amid Aleph. What's the question? No? When does Tisha B'Av fall this coming year? On Sunday. Shabbos is Erev Tisha B'Av. We always have a Shabbat in the 9 days. This coming year, you're going to have Shabbat Mamish Erev Tisha B'Av. Zach, what are you allowed to eat on Shabbat during the 9 days? Your mother makes chicken soup, chicken, meat, the works. No, isn't that our minhag? There were Jews who would not eat meat on Shabbat. And imagine a woman comes from a kehillah where they don't eat meat on Shabbat, the 9 days. Halacha kama v'kama, Shabbat, Erev Tisha B'Av. Just think for a minute. Our minig is for sudashli shit on Shabbat Erev Tisha B'Av. We eat Yisudat Shlomo Kamalach B'Shaito. Right or wrong? And an hour later, you're sitting on the floor and you're crying about Churban Habayit. And then we have a whole machloket whether we wear Shabbos clothes. And there too, I've never yet seen anyone come to shul on Shabbat during the 9 days in a weekday setup. Even Rakefet wears a white shirt to show it, so it's no longer the weekday, it's Shabbat Kodesh. You follow me? You follow me, Moshe? So here, this woman, and I can understand it, Churban Habayit, they talk about the Rishon HaRebbe, that when he reached B'nei Chatatenu Galinu Mi'atzenu Ve'en Anachi Yecholim La'alot U'Hishtachavot L'fanecha, when he reached that in Musaf, he started crying. Hours it took him. The Kahal had to finish davening. You all know how many of you have Rishon of blood in you. No, nobody has Rishon of blood. Look, I can't believe it. There's so many descendants. So you all know the Rishon LeRabbeim davened in a separate room. They didn't daven with the Chassidim. They davened in a separate room with their own mechitza alone because they went into ecstasy hours of davening. No, when we say Mitnechateinu Galinu Me'atzeinu, I don't want to say, all right, Mitnechateinu Galinu Me'atzeinu. Why are we always, again, I'll play Yoni's role. Why are we always blaming ourselves? Why are we always browbeating? Mitnechateinu Galinu Me'atzeinu. Oh, but a Jew has to daven. Mitnechateinu Galinu Me'atzeinu. V'yeina nachmi yicholim. And halavai, Jews would have kavanah. Could you imagine in the five towns if they said v'karev pizureinu mi ben hagayim unafutzateinu kanes meyakatei haaretz? And a good Jew would say, gee, what's the big deal? I'm going to Tel Al tomorrow buying a ticket. V'zachinu v'karev pizureinu mi ben hagayim. Now, this lady, so I don't want to minimize, she doesn't want to eat meat on Shabbat, as much as we love Shabbat, as much as we honor Shabbat, but Ribbono Shel Olam, it's Erev Tisha B'Av, it's the 9 days. We feel the Churban. And she marries this man, and you know, men like to eat. I know my children laugh at me. I personally, if I have a choice, I don't eat meat at all, not Shabbat, not Erev Tisha B'Av, not the 9 days, not all year. I'm a fish dairy man. This is middle age. My taste buds shifted for health reasons. And boy, there's nothing better than a good piece of salmon, let me tell you. But my grandchildren laugh at me. My grandchildren tell me, a meal is not a meal without meat. They break a fast. The kids all fast. They break a fast with a meat meal. I think they're insane. They think I'm depriving myself of the joys of life, but this is reality. And the husband is insistent she must eat good meat. It's Shabbat. We have to celebrate. And he paskins la halacha. The choma kama sheyifneh harosh shechucha ish. Acharav yelchu. Not just plain meat. Ah, oh, this is not stam Israeli meat. I went out to a restaurant last week. Friends took us out. Oh my gosh, a place called Gabriel. It's Gabriel Luis Milchiker, Gabriel de Fleischer. I mean, these people are eating the finest restaurants in the world. They were blown away. A glatt kosher restaurant that's on the level of the Waldorf Astoria. I couldn't believe it.
The price
sky high, and there wasn't an empty seat in the restaurant. You heard every language there. English, Italian, Spanish, French, Hebrew, Yiddish. Every language was in an empty seat. It's amazing. Unsi Yidden, Baruch Hashem. God bless them. And there many were tourists, many are locals. But, oh, that's meat. Wow. That's basa shamein. I love it. I love it. You see the tshuva. It brings life. You understand, Daniel? Don't you daven up a tshuva. Think for a minute. Give me one.
Very elevated.
Yeah.
A person is sitting shirt.
Yeah.
Come Shabbos day, there's always a Shabbos during Shabbos.
Right, he's allowed to eat meat.
Is he allowed to eat meat?
Of course, he's only not allowed to eat meat when he's a non-man.
I understand, I know the answer to the question also. So why is it that this should be...
This was the...
Let's
put it this way. We all, everyone knows they have to die. Death is built into life. Churban HaBayit is more than a personal tragedy. It's the tragedy of the Jewish people. It's Churban HaBayit. It's the 6 million. You understand? I can understand this woman. I can understand them. It's not that I'm going to go to Borough Park.
Which I don't have this.
Today, I've never seen anyone observe this. You'd have to ask someone who's an expert on Menhagim in the Sephardic world. But he's describing it. Anyone here? Last year we had, do me a favor, ask your, what's his name, Yosef Chaim? Ask Yosef Chaim if he knows about this Menhag. But boy, I love it. Now, and here's another word that you must understand. And I want to tell you, this is the hardest part of marriage, having seen so many marriages, having seen my students, having seen family, having seen the battles between husband and wife. She'en la'ad shayachat demaviha. Listen to these words. U'kekatan shenolad dami. These are very strong words. Any psychologist today would foam at the mouth hearing these words. Just think for a minute if you've studied psychology. But you see, he says, when you marry Alkenya Zovisha the Vivi Mova the Bakbi Ishto, this is the nature of life. This is the secret of life. It's a very difficult situation. Look into Family Redeemed and read the Rav's Drasha from 1968, the first Tanya Soloveitchik Memorial Drasha, where he deals with the difference between the male personality and the female personality. And let me tell you, Nathaniel, the Rav's depth is overwhelming, where he describes a father who's the happiest guy in the world when his son leaves home, gets a degree, gets married, moves on, and the mother Chaim, who cries, she lost her son. And this is why the Mishnah says in Yevamot, you all know that a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law can't testify for each other because there's a chazaka, shesonot zu et zu. They hate each other. Why? It's subconscious. If a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law get along, it's a miracle. I've seen miracles. But generally speaking, it's subconscious because along came this strange girl and took away her son, the pride, the medical doctor, the Talmud Chacham, the Gon, whatever she's happy about. And this is an amazing statement. When you get married, Kekotin Shenolat Dami. Wow. And I have to tell you, this is why I have deep objection to separate seating, all this foolishness that has come into our world today. Whoever heard of separate seating in Europe? I'll take you to a wedding 100 years ago, a Mir wedding, a Panovich wedding, a Tell's wedding. Family sat together. But you see, separate seating goes against the Torah. Alkenya Zovisha, the Vivimo, Vidavak Bishto, Vahayal, Vahayul, Basarachad. And this is exactly what it means. When a woman marries, she and her husband are one unit. Her parents. This is why I told Sherry, we were discussing Kibbutz Aviyim earlier today. So Sherry was telling me about her grandmother, and I was telling her about my mother. They're essentially the same age. And I said to her that Kibbutz Aviyim, why is it a mitzvah? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I spoke about this already a few years ago, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu declare it a mitzvah? It's logical. You owe your parents. You're all honorable men here. Someone does you a favor, someone's nice to you, I would like to believe that you're going to be nice to them. It's logical. But oh no, Kibbutz Aviyim, one time you were with your parents, you were part of that unit. Now 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years have gone by, and you're a totally separate unit. Oh boy.
Remember,
Kabeidat Avich V'yatimecha, the Ribbono Shel Olam has to command it, because you're lost in a different world. These words are very, very fascinating. Okay? Now, then he quotes the Tashbeis, what happens if the husband dies, and the whole question, she does have children, doesn't have children, and here he says something very fascinating. He deals with the psychology of a person, and here I believe the psychologist would be in agreement. Look, you take a kid, you know, your generation. My generation was very different, but you know that your generation, they inculcate you willy-nilly in many, many places, including to a certain degree, I understand Torah Shrag as well, Shalavim, KPY, that if you wear a black hat, you're a better Jew. Okay? And I don't have to tell you, wearing a black hat today has become very, very widespread. As a matter of fact, when we were sitting at the restaurant and talking, so my colleague, my friend, my host, told me how he went to the Simcha in YU, a family that he knows very well from Lawrence. Their son got married, and he was flabbergasted. This is a YU crowd, and he was the only one there without a black hat. Every Talmud, everyone had a black hat. Okay, do we need a black hat? Don't we need a black hat? That's a different story. But I have long defended kids who feel they need a black hat. Your generation is different. My generation, if we made a commitment to observe Torah, it was a very strong commitment. We didn't need any outer garments to strengthen that commitment. Your generation, everyone is frum today. When everyone is frum, everyone is not frum. Lo mi rubachem b'kol hamim b'chabachem Hashem. Be'et Chanan. It's a meridic pasuk. And it's a pasuk with a lot of depth to it. Today, everyone is frum. Look, take a look what we have today. I want to go further. Who ever heard of Torah Jews murdering other Jews? I have to go any further. Staten Island, Borough Park, Netivot. You follow me, Daniel? Whoever heard, who could conceive of this? Who could conceive of this? So today it could be to strengthen your commitment. You need the Hasidic overtones. Now, imagine you get married and you marry into a family where no one wears a black hat. And your wife is putting pressure on you. You're embarrassing me. You're wearing a black hat. Everyone else wears a kippah strugah, whatever the circumstances are. So you see, in your mindset, you probably will feel, gee, if I take off that black hat, I'm coming down. I'm not as firm as I used to be. I'm not as committed. And I personally would always advise, if people ask me if a young man wears a black hat, allow him, respect him, encourage him. There's no need. I don't wear a black hat, and I never taught my children and grandchildren to wear black hats. Correct. But I come from a different world. I come from a different world, and I live, you know, in my world, I'm living, this year is 50 years ahead, and this year is 50 years behind. So I'm living in a 100-year span, Baruch Hashem. I don't need a black hat. But I understand that feeling. It's a psychological feeling. So he raises the point here that maybe the lady will feel that her religion is coming down. Until now, she didn't eat meat on Tisha B'Av, and now she's going to eat meat on Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. Maybe I'm compromising, maybe I'm coming down. Yoni, maybe I'm diminishing my sacredness. You follow me? It's like, I'll put it in your words, it's like a Chabadnik who is told he must trim his beard. Do you know anything about Chabad and beards? Do you understand what a beard is to Chabad? And to Kabbalah, etc.? That the real Chabadnikim?
Why is that so important?
Because they feel, if it's a Chassidic concept, if the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to have payas, the bigger the payas, the more beautiful. If the Ribbono Shel Olam told you there are five places on your mouth where you can't shave, then he wants you to have some sort of a beard. The bigger the beard, the better. It shows how you love the Ribbono Shel Olam, how you embellish the mitzvah. and the old Chabadnikim never touched their beards. Those people who opposed the Rebbe claimed that he shaved and trimmed his beard when he was in Paris. That's what I understand. I got to see the new book. It's in my family, so I'm waiting in line to get it. My grandson was given it. He's a Bal Kore, so the shul always gives him a gift. So they gave my 14-year-old grandson two books, Mevakshe Panecha and the biography on the Lubavitcher, which was translated into Hebrew, and it's a little bit changed in the Hebrew version. And believe me, this 14-year-old kid will understand it all better than I do, but that's a different story. A grandfather's proud of his grandson, Baruch Hashem. So you understand, psychologically, maybe she feels she's coming down. So he says at the end of the tshuva that he wants her to know, this is not a kula, this is not a chumrah, it has nothing to do with frumkeit, it's purely minhag Yisrael. And if your husband's minhag was different, then you must follow him. Okay. Beautiful tshuva. Fascinating. And this leads us to the heart of today's shir. I'm going to quote, and I set the stage already, when you talk of the Sitton family, you know Sitton. They spell it Samech Tov. Hey, Vav, Nun. English versions, Sutton, Sit, S-I-T-T. Any of you have gone to Flatbush Yeshiva? Nobody. There have to be endless Suttons, Sits, that have gone through Flatbush. Where the name comes from, Sutton, they say, Sitton. It's business people who deal in merchandise. When they shortened it up to Sit, they claimed they did that to indicate they are Sfaradim Tahorim. I have taught many members of this family. Today, the family specializes in business people, banking people. They're the heart of the Syrian community. There are some Rabbanim in the family. At one time, the family also turned out Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. I'm quoting from a Sefer called Sefer Eretz Chaim, Harav Chaim Sitton. He was born in Tzfat, and from 1902 on, he was the Tzfadik chief rabbi of Tzfat. But don't have to tell you, to be a chief rabbi, people bother you. He could afford to leave the rabbinate. And after a few years, he went back to being a balabas, didn't have to worry about money, and published a very fascinating sefer where he deals with Minhagei Eretz Yisrael. And I'm going to quote from that sefer in detail now, and it gives you a lot of insight, an amazing tshuva. He touches so much ground and deals with a very, very basic problem, and then at the very end, he comes into the husband and wife. Now, how do I know that the rabbinate causes so much detractions? So I'll tell you one little story. I know, first of all, Al-Basariya Chazena. I was in the rabbinate, and I know what the rabbinate can be like. The rub was in the rabbinate, and when he let his hair down and discussed the rabbinate, and not many people realize that in 1956, the rub gave 56, could be 55, 2 years, he gave unbelievable personal talks at the YU Rabbinic Alumni, where he reveals his heart and soul. And Rabbi Moshe Lichtenstein quotes his mother, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, as saying that in the Soloveitchik family, they, on a one-to-one basis, they can never reveal their thoughts, their inner feelings, their emotions. The Rav spoke about this many times. They're very cold. And in front of 10,000 people, they can reveal everything. And that was exactly the Rav, exactly the Rav. And Moshe says, my father is like that. He says, maybe I'm a little like that. But that was exactly the Rav. People were, I can tell you, when Alat Shiva came out, so in the Israeli press, where at that time Rabbanim kept like a mafaked in the army. There's a word they use in the army, a beautiful new Hebrew word, distance. No matan, tell the class what distance means. You keep your distance from your commander. I can tell you, sometimes a sergeant meets his lieutenant at a wedding, he's afraid to dance with him. Distance. And Rosh Yeshiva in Israel, they were amazed that the Rav and Alat Shuv and Dresha spoke about his late wife and his longing and his suffering and his father and his dreams. And this it's an unbelievably valid point. What's amazing here about the Chaim Siton, he goes into so many basic problems of Minhag, and you have to be thankful that he left the rabbinate. And that's the story I started to tell you with Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spector. Who succeeded Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spector Novarak? Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spector was Rabbi Novarak. He built up a tremendous reputation. Who can tell me why? The Be'er Yitzchak, the Nachlat Yitzchak, his Sfarim, the Ein Yitzchak, he was the expert of the generation in being Matir Aguna. I wrote, if you're Kafra Kafar Aaron, read my monograph on the 100th anniversary of his death. I wrote about the greatness of Rabbi Yisrael Chanan being Matir Aguna, and I completed, by doing that, I completed Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shimonov, Zichrono Levracha, his doctor in Rabbi Yisrael Chanan, because he didn't deal with Aguna. He felt it would be too difficult for the reader in the United States in the 1950s to understand. So I felt by the 1990s I could write about it and people would comprehend it. So I feel my monograph on Yitzchok Chanan is a hashlama, a completion of Dr. Shimov's doctor in Yitzchok Chanan. So he was a Nabatic, built up a reputation, and they called him to the most preeminent rabbinate in the Lithuanian world, Kovna. Why was Kovna more important than Vilna? Gentlemen, what do you know? Let's see knowledge thrown around here. You guys have smicha, getting smicha. Knowledge. What? Why not Vilna? Ah, because Vilna, from the time of the Gaon and the big machleket of Shmuel, the Avbeitin, and who will succeed, Vilna made a takana, they will never have a chief rabbi. Jews are like Jerusalem. We go 40, 50 years until they finally deal with politics, knife each other, kill each other, shoot each other, and go to Las Vegas and appoint finally a new chief rabbi. But by the time he's appointed, he's so old, he doesn't live that long. And again, we'll go another 50 years. And you all know, I'm talking in Yonah Diyoma. So he goes to Kovna. And who goes to Novarak? Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan. And Rabbi Yisrael Chanan said, cried inside, why did I leave Novarak? Look what the Novarak Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein was able to write, the Aruch HaShulchan, classic, basic, overwhelming. And he says, what can I do in Kovna? I'm so bothered, people so trouble me that I barely have time to write Shuva to be Matir Aguna. That's Rabbi Yisrael Chanan. So Rav Siton left the rabbinate in Baruch Hashem. He gave us a marvelous gift. Now, I'm quoting from Sefer Eretz HaChaim, Kuntras HaKlolim, beginning on page 22. I want to see if I have a number here. No, this is what I have. Okay, beginning on page 22, I'm holding it in front of me. Now, what's the problem he deals with here? The problem is essentially as if it was taken out of the newspapers today. Tell me, gentlemen, who davened in a shul, not in Gris, went into a shul in Givat Mordechai, in Cholomayit? Ephraim, where you grew up, Toronto, what did you do, Cholomayit? Did you put on tefillin? Yes or no? No? What did you do, Yitzchak, in Maimonides?
I really think Rabbi Simon put out tefillin.
Of course.
Without a bracha.
Of course. We put out tefillin without a bracha, made it tonight, that if the Cholamoid is a time of tefillin, that's a basic machlokin, how you do Cholamoid. Is there Kedusha Tayom? Or is it really a Yom Shel Chol with a Korban Musaf, but it's not a real Kedusha Tayom that would knock out the tefillin because you don't have Labriot, you don't have the oath. You don't have the oath of Kedusha Tayom, or you don't have the full oath. It's not like as we should have. Fine. So he put on tefillin, made a tonight. If it's his man of tefillin, these are tefillin. If it's not his man, this is a Kishit B'Alma. Daniel, do you know what will happen to you if you go into Givat Mordechai, on Sukkot, into a shul, and put on tefillin as was your wont in Far Rockaway, or Lawrence, wherever, whatever? You know what will happen to you? They will lift you up with the tefillin on and throw you out without mercy and maledict you to the end. Are you aware of that? No? This is a tremendous question. We have a kibbutz galut. We have people coming in from every part of the earth with every language, with every minhag, with every background, with every posek, right or wrong. What's going on, alad mata kodesh? So what's wrong? What's wrong? Tell me, what's wrong? Why is there so much written in the Achronim with the problem of tefillin on Chol HaMoed? What's wrong? Some Jews put on, some Jews don't put on. Live and let live. Let's bring in what I spoke about last Monday, a democratic value. Live and let live. Ribbono Shel Olam, what am I getting so uptight about? Why? Now, by the way, I know cases of stupid tourists who didn't check, and they went into shuls in Yerushalayim and put on tefillin, and they were literally assaulted. You know, the more intelligent people came over and explained to them that in Yerushalayim no one puts on tefillin in Chol HaMoed. But nowadays that religion is massive and everyone is religious, the pushtakin, the gangsters in the shul, throw them out, plain and simple, like it's Chil Shabbos. What's wrong? Live and let live. Gentlemen, we have a concept of lo titko didu, an isa d'oraita, lo ta'asu agudat agudat. We have to have one lifestyle. We can't go on living 10 different ways. And this is what haunts us about tefillin. Some do, some don't. Are we one people, one nation, one religion? Or are we 10 different sects under some nebulous roof? And this is the problem. And the Gemara already discusses this. All the sources are right here in the Tshuva. But I'm quite certain if you would look up the topic under the rubric of Beit Din in the Encyclopedia Talmudica, I'm sure that this issue has to be discussed there. The Talmudica is fabulous, and what we have, it is, I just had a shayla with chalitza, the whole question, what if, do you write a shtar chalitza or a get chalitza when chalitza is done? What about if chalitza is done berabim, in public? What is the nusach of the get chalitza or the shtar? And I looked into the Encyclopedia Talmudica, and there's endless material on these two topics. It's just a pleasure. The whole world is right there at your fingertips. Or as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says, we don't need Bekiyim anymore, because with all the Sfarim we have, I'll talk about this in this class later on, the era in which we're living, and with all the computerization, everyone is a self, is an instantaneous buggy today. It's an interesting comment on the Derech and learning and what we should stress. So, you see, what if you have in a city two different batei dinim? Two different batei dinim. It's a sugi in Yevamot, daf yud dalet. You have two different batei dinim. And one paskins lahakel, one paskins lahachmir. Is this an isa d'oraita? And we paskin, it's a whole sugya? Absolutely not. People can have differences of opinion. We can't have thought control. You can't force people into a straitjacket. And if you have two reliable but they dinim, then you have every right to follow the Beit Din that you belong to. And he brings a tshuvat that in Saloniki, where you had Sfardim and Ashkenazim, each one followed their own Beit Din, their own practice. And in other words, what does this mean? That Lotit Godadu means one community. And if you're part of one community, and within the community itself, you have in one little shul different minhagim, then you're going to have a problem of lo tidgodadu. But if it's two separate communities, then each one is free to follow the community that he belongs to. And this becomes axiomatic to this tshuva. He has so much insight in here. And he speaks about, he quotes about Yerushalayim, the Ginat Baradim. These are Sfarim on Yerushalayim out of the 19th century. Fabulous Sfarim. And even though the Sfarim were originally the majority, but then the Ashkenazim started to come. Listen to these words. L'chavzik b'chol min hagei Ashkenazim kilo hayu b'toch iparchiyah shebi Ashkenaz k'kulehen u'kilchom rehem. And you see, you can live in Yerushalayim. And in reality, your religious life is governed by Frankfurt am Main. It's as if you didn't leave Frankfurt, you didn't leave Hamburg. In our case, you didn't leave Boston, you didn't leave New York, you didn't leave Los Angeles. This is your minhag. This is your community. These are your rabbanim. There is no tit goldadu. You belong to a separate community. And this becomes the theme of the entire tshuva, and he gives us many examples halakha l'maaseh. Mendel, let me tell you, I think I know what you want to ask. Yes, this sounds very nice at the first instance, but what about 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, the kids who grow up? The second generation, the third generation, and there is no doubt that ultimately Eretz Yisrael develops its own minhag, its own Beit Din, its own way of life. And every youngster has a right to be part of his chevra. And the greatest example is tefillin. See, I often say that tefillin on Chol HaMoed is a miracle. Why? Because if you're familiar with the literature, it's a basic machloket, and really the Rav told us, if I recall correctly, the Rav didn't put on tefillin Chol HaMoed, because Reb Chaim didn't put on tefillin. But he said he always paskins you should put on tefillin with a tanai, it's a suffix. The oraita, tefillin is a din in the Torah. And then the Kabbalah came around, and you see the Kabbalah sees halacha on a different level. It's a different vision. We see halacha, black and white, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avram, the Arach HaShulchan, the Mishnah Brura. The Kabbalah sees conflict. Kedushat Sukkot is conflicting with Kedushat Tefillin. You can't have two Kedushat at the same time. one knocks the other one out. Now, what's amazing in Israel, everyone threw the gauntlet down, and no one but no one puts on tefillin and challah. Not Ashkenazim, not Sfardim, not Litoyim, not Hasidim, not Mekubalim. Kabbalah influenced the halacha here. Give you another example. You just had Yom Tov Sheni. No, Hasidim don't put on tefillin. Ashkenazim, Litoyim put on. Yeah, Litoyim put on. I give you another example, a powerful example. I came here, some of you know that I live out of Gris. It's not just where I teach. It's not just, it's, I don't work here. I have a calling here. And I live here. And I have a lot that I have to keep on catching up with everything. I can't let it pile up. So I was here every day, Chol Hamoed. So I noticed on Yom Tov Sheni, it's just amazing. Here it's Eretz Yisrael. And 2 feet away, it's Chutz Laaretz. Now this is a, you know, understand you had a minyan in the Beis Medrash, Eretz Yisrael, and in the auditorium I see endless people davening Yom Tov Sheni, Chutz Laaretz davening, people come down evidently from, but who is here Yom Tov Sheni? From Bayit Vagan? I mean, these were not the BMT people, the Torah Tshraga people. I saw an entire slew of people that evidently fell down the hill from Bayit Vagan. Now, tell me, when you look at it with plain eyes, the way you look at it, no, it's a machlokes hapoiskim, Rakef had spent a year in the kollel, a year and a quarter, beautiful shayurim, very nice, wonderful, good, everything is seen through halachic eyes. And some of you say, we got a psak from one Beit Din that it's where your feet are, we're in Israel, and therefore we are davening like every other Israeli. The other crowd in the auditorium, Rakefet, keep out of here, we got a psak from our Beit Din, it's the community you belong to, and we are Chutz La'aretz people, we're going back, and therefore we keep 2 full days. Okay? Fine. Machlokes HaPoskim, I'm not here. I, as you all know, if anyone asks me the Shaila, if you come for a year, I would paskin the second day you don't do malacha the oraita, but you certainly daven like an Israeli. It's like Kriyat Megillah. I paskin. I spoke with the Rebbe about this. You follow me, Moshe? Well, I spoke with the Rebbe. I don't play games. You understand? The Chab Gedet and Lenin. And the Rebbe told me he spoke with his father when he visited here in 35. And for Shavuos, his father told him that the Chacham Tzvi is absolutely correct. No one has ever refuted the Chacham Tzvi, and the proof of it is right now. Are you saying the Ten Talamotel of Racha? Tell me, Zach, are you saying it now? You're saying Masha Baruch Hamored Geshem? The Ten Talamotel of Racha, are you saying? Absolutely not. You're waiting till, what is it, the Wednesday night, I think we start. Why? What are you waiting for? Nuri Gemara, tell me. For the Olay Regal to go back home. We give them, I think it is 14 days, so they shouldn't be out traveling with their wagons and the heavy rain coming down. You understand? No, what does that tell you? No, Nataniel, fish it out, like a Talmud Chacham. What does it tell you? That they were Olay Regal at the time of the Gemara. And you don't see one word in the Gemara that the Olay Regal observed 2 days when they were in Eretz Yisrael. It's irrefutable. All right, the Shulchan Aruch, so why do I pass in a second day L'chumra? So I asked Rebbe, so Rebbe said, so Rebbe, you know, 2 reasons. One, it's a psak of the Shulchan Aruch. It's very hard to go against the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. I'll talk about this in this class later on this year. It's very hard to go against the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Kibla Aleim Yisrael, we'll talk in great detail. It's crucial. Yoni, to answering your question, those lectures are crucial. Fine. Secondly, no, a guy will observe only one day. He goes back to Cleveland, he goes back to Staten Island, and a kid says, look, I'm going in Aliyah, I plan Aliyah when I finish college, when I finish graduate school, when I get married, when I have 5 kids, when I have $2 million, I'm planning Aliyah. Why do I have to observe a second day Yom Tov? You'll be mezalzel in Yom Tov Sheni, chas v'chalila. You have to observe the second day to remember there is a Yontif Sheni. Now, this psak obligates me. I was just in America for Shavuos. What did I observe on Shavuos? Two complete days. The only thing I did, in my hotel room, quietly, clandestinely, I put on tefillin without a bracha, and I made a deal with Rebbein Shalayim, if it's a time of tefillin, these are tefillin, if not, it's a kishut b'amah, like you do, chalamai. Okay? Okay, so then...
You visited America during Chol Moed Sukkos, you wear tefillin?
No, not today. Today I would have the samach on all the shita that you don't wear. I'm not going to put on tefillin Chol Moed. I haven't put on tefillin for 43 years in Chol Moed. Now, gentlemen, that's with halachic eyes. A makubal walks in, and he sees here they're davening Yontif, and here they're davening Chol, and it's Eretz Yisrael. He becomes hysterical. What, are you crazy? The rays of God, the emanations from God, listen to every syllable I'm saying. The emanations from God vary from day to day. On a weekday, it's emanations of Chol. On a Yontif, it's emanations of Kedusha. How dare you, daven Kedusha, Musaf, make Kiddush, Brachot Levatala, on a day that the emanations are emanations of Chol? Who just said what I said? Matan, give me a gift. Give the Rebbe a gift. Who just said that? Matan gave a matana to the Rebbe, because he just told the Rebbe, Rebbe, what you just said is not yours, you're a thief. You're right. Who did I rob it from? The Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Right there in the first chapter in Hakamat HaBota, getting up in the morning, he discusses the emanations of God. Yitzchak, do you understand it? I don't.
I respect it.
You have to be a makubo. But you see, there's an entire different feeling, understanding. And in Eretz Yisrael, the Kabbalah plays a role. You cannot dismiss the Ari HaKodesh. Rebbe Ovadia struggles in many tshuvot when there's a machloket between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ari HaKodesh. So, one thing is for sure.
So the Kutzah is the second day you need it because of the emanations.
The emanations of Kadosh. And the third Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, said Pshat. I quoted this from his Sefer Hashkafa. Why do you need 2 days in Chutz Laretz? Because it's harder for the Jew to feel the Kedusha. He needs 2 full days to warm up. Follow? It's like a pitcher, a hard dealing baseball. When the weather is cold, he has to throw the ball 20 times before he comes in. When it's the height of summer, 10 warm-up pitches, and he's ready to strike out Babe Ruth with the bases loaded. When did that happen? 1926 World Series. Grover Cleveland Alexander. Dead drunk. The day before, he won against the Yankees, and he was out all night celebrating and drinking. Today, the players don't drink so much because they make so many millions of dollars. They recognize they can harm their bodies, but in those days a player made very little and they were dead drunk. The tension of being a ball player, you know, it's not giving a sheer, it's terrible tension. And he was dead drunk, came in from the bullpen, Babe Ruth, bases loaded. Gentlemen, the summer plays a role, the winter plays a role. What can I tell you? In Eretz Yisrael, the Kabbalah plays a role in the halakha. It cannot be dismissed. So Kozman, we are two different, but they didn't, they're two different in Hagim. Right now at the start of the Kibbutz Galiot, there's no question you have Ashkenaz shuls, Sfadik shuls, Eidot HaMizrach shuls, that divide into Tunisian shuls, Yemenite shuls, Moroccan shuls, you name it, you can find a shul that will satisfy your minhag from the Altarheim, from the old home, from the Mela, from the ghetto. But I agree, as time moves on, the ingathering of the exiles ultimately erases the two Batei Dinim and it fuses into one. Sometimes, let me give a simple example, which is a poor example, but it's an example we all have every day in life. Go into a shtibl in Katamon, many other shtiblach. You don't know what nusach the chazan will daven till he opens his mouth. In Katamon, chok v'lo yavar, the chazan davening sets the nusach. And I've walked into minyanim where I wound up davening Eidot HaMizrach, Svarad, Yemenite. It's unbelievable to hear a Yemenite daven the way he pronounces the words. Many words he pronounces exactly like a Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovich or in Mir or in Hebron. It's amazing, amazing. And yet, there's this blending into one. The army, go into any shul in the army. There is no such thing as a minhag kavua. Rav Goren tried, couldn't succeed. But who knows, 50 years, 100 years from now, there will very well be a minhag Eretz Yisrael that will take the best out of all the minhagim. Hold on one second.
Everybody says it.
But on this concept, there's no lotit kol to do. If you have a beitin, and you have a rav, you have a school of thought, you're entitled. We don't force you. We don't break your arm. Yes, Yitzchak.
I want to ask you the issue of waiting between meat and milk. When we were in Chutz Laaretz, 5 hours, a half hour, 6 hours. Then all of a sudden here in the Kibbutz Adati, they developed, I think they came also from Germany.
To
wait 3 hours.
Right.
And that left Kibbutz Adati and infiltrated throughout all of Israel.
I don't know if it's inside, and I can only tell you in my family, I have a 1 year key son-in-law, they talk away to me 3 hours. My wife says after every meal they have dessert, ice cream. That's my wife's joke. My other son-in-law waits 6 hours. I don't know if it's infiltrated, but if you want to know, Meikar Hadin, you only have to wait 1 hour. 3 hours already is a chumrah. You can find Jews, I think, from Holland, where they wait 1 hour. And the Gemara talks 1 hour or 6 hours. 3 hours became sort of a compromise between the two shittot. Look, 100 years from now, there may be a universal minhag, I don't know. But right now, I have not seen, I don't know too many Ashkenazim who wait only 3 hours instead of six. Or as you say, 5 hours, the Lashon HaRambam, Mishnah HaShishit, the sixth hour. In Mir, in the Alta Mir, I know there were Mekil in the sixth hour, they ate milchiks. It's based upon the Rambam.
Now the minhag, for example, we just went through the simplest Torah. Reading the Torah in the simplest Torah.
Right.
No.
He talks about it here. I have to tell you that in my shul we don't read the Torah. And I have tremendous difficulty with reading the Torah at night. Because in order to, if reading the Torah, you can read the Torah anytime. The problem is the brachot. And you can only make a bracha when Chazal will mitakin the bracha. And then you're allowed to say Hashem's name and the Birchat HaTorah. Who ever heard of reading the Torah at night? Now this became a halakha l'maisa in World War II. Remember I spoke about it? In World War II, you had places, and Yitz was a chaplain, he can tell you, you couldn't get a minyan by day. The soldiers were out fighting. But the only time you could do anything was Friday night. Are you allowed to read the Torah Friday night?
Baruch HaTom Melacholam Shekon. So the JWB put together a committee, which
right.
Leo Young was the authorized right. representative.
Right, and they came out with a psak that you can read the Torah but not to make bracha. And that was the compromise. It's based upon an etziv, a meshiv dava, Let me quote it in class already. It'll take a few minutes, but it's worth your knowing it. It's a very fascinating Meshiv Davetz. Chelek Aleph, I believe it's Tshuva Yud Zayin. The Tshuva is to Rabbi Lesser from Baltimore. Rabbi Avram Gershon, I believe the name is Lesser. You can check out the Tshuva. And what was the Shaila? It's a typical American Shaila. Cincinnati, not from Baltimore, from Cincinnati. Cincinnati had a large community of East European Jews. So one East European Jew, it has to be in the 1880s, I would imagine, 1870s, 1880s, one Eastern European Jew made some good money. So now he made some good money, so in American style, he wanted to show off that he was now a wealthy man, not just a lowly immigrant who could barely speak English. No, what do you do to show off? He built a beautiful Aron Kodesh for the shul. But he made a condition with the rabbi that he wants them to have the dedication on Sunday when no one works, and they should call him up to the Torah in front of all the men, women, and children, show how Mr. Immigrant became a big shot, and he'll make Birchat HaTorah, and they'll lay it in his honor. And the poor rabbi, who's desperate because he wants the Aron HaKodesh, he needs the Aron HaKodesh, never Rabbanim have to raise money. This is an old klala for the rabbinate. But we see that Moshe Rabbeinu and Bezalel also had to raise money to build the Mishkan. So perhaps you have to look at it as an ancient profession for the rabbinate. And the Nebuch, he's going to lose the money. He doesn't know what to do. So he writes to the Nitziv. So the Nitziv goes into a whole analysis of what Kriyat HaTorah is and says, to say Birchat HaTorah at a time that Chazal were not matakin, and this is talking on a plain Sunday morning, 12 noon, they're going to say Birchat HaTorah, this is something that he cannot be makir. And this becomes the whole basis for the tshuva of the JWB. This was the Netziv of Elushin. Now he pleads with the rabbi. He says, plead with this balabas. How does he do mitzvah, habab, yavera? Let the man feel that he's doing a mitzvah. Chasvachil, he should do an avera. Now, and this is the tshuva of the Netziv, and this is the same problem reading the Torah at night. Who ever heard of such a thing? Some people give 3 aliyahs, 5 aliyahs at night. By the way, you know what I would have answered had I gotten the Shaila? I would have answered Rabbi Lisa that do the party 12 noon when Rosh Chodesh falls on Sunday. And have 10 people who will not hear the kriya in the morning. Let them walk out of shul. Let them come back at 12 o'clock. And at 12 o'clock, do the kriya for them.
How often do you have a Sunday?
Well, you got to wait. That happens occasionally. Let the man wait. Look at the calendar. I think every year you're going to wind up with one Rosh Chodesh on a Sunday. If not Rosh Chodesh, Chalamayit, but Chalamayit, I guess it wasn't big enough for the man. He wanted, you know, a day that's a day of Chulin Lingamrei, and they're honoring him. How do I know this? Many times in yeshiva, the Rav came in Monday morning. Monday morning, he traveled by train. These were in the mid-50s. It's a long trip. Many times he flew Monday morning, had to get to the airport. He didn't daven with the minyan. He missed Kriyat HaTorah. He gave shir. And after shir, he'd say, "No, how many of you didn't hear Kriyat HaTorah this morning? I don't want to tell you what the answer was." 35 guys walked into the Beis Medrash with the Rav. And we read the Torah before Mincha. So you see now there's literature on this, that the Rav held the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Pei Bet, Shalom Yehu Gimme Yamim Beli Kriyat HaTorah, the Rav held that you could read the Torah in the afternoon as well, b'diavad, if you missed it in the morning. That's number one. Number two, did I ever tell you the story of Mount Eden Center? Did I tell it here or did I tell it out? I must have told it. I know I told it recently, but evidently in a public talk. It's a fabulous story. I'm an eye ear witness. The Rav often said that when he came to Boston, there were no Shomer Shabbos at all between the ages of 13 to 70. Everyone worked. And Bar Mitzvah and retirees, they could afford to be Shomer Shabbos. The Rav said there were just three men in Boston who were Shomer Shabbos, and all three became his brothers-in-law. One of them married his wife's sister, Professor Lisman. He taught mathematics at Yeshiva University. Nu vayehi hayom, his son is being bar mitzvah. Now, the Lismans lived in the heart of the Bronx, the heart of the Jewish Bronx, Mount Eden area. If you know the Bronx, it's about 12, 13 blocks from Yankee Stadium. That whole area was Jewish. Yankee Stadium was surrounded by Jews. The whole area was Jewish. And the Bar Mitzvah is going to be in the biggest modern Orthodox shul, the Mount Eden Center, Rabbi David Hollander. And the Rav is coming for Shabbat. No, I don't have to tell you what it meant. You can't start to understand. The Rav is coming for Shabbat. Every kid made it his business. If he had to walk from Washington Heights, if he had to walk from the Bronx, I never doubted. It's the only time he ever doubted in that Eden Center. The Rav. And lo and behold, there's another kid being bar mitzvah that day. What do you do? And the Rav took 10 of us. Go out, I will call you back. Right after the Kriya, sent us out. 10 minutes later, calls us back in, and no, you didn't hear the maftir. You didn't hear the haftorah. And his nephew read the maftir for us and read the haftorah. You see what he did? Two different minyanim. We each had a separate chiyuv. And I still remember the balabatim, the Yudapayish balabatim, you know, the old timers were butchering, you know, they were mad, it's taking more time. And what is this? We never saw this before. It's crazy. And the administrator of Yeshiva Salata, the elementary yeshiva, Rabbi Savitz, who came from Boston, was there. And he got hysterical. You are Mayaritz, you ignoramuses, you boors. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik, the greatest rabbi alive, who's telling us what to do. And you dare to question it? But what do you see? Kriyat HaTorah, you can do, there's a solution, but there has to be a chiyuv. You can't come along Simchas Torah night and suddenly say, we're giving Aliyah.
So where did it start?
Where did it start? I'm waiting. Gentlemen, all of Simchas Torah is a farce. Whoever heard of Simchas Torah morning, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every Chaim, Shmerel, Beryl, and Leryl has to have an Aliyah. How many Aliyah do you give on Yom Tov? Five Aliyah. No. What do you say? Help me out. Gentlemen, Simchas Torah, halachically, the hardest holiday to justify. The minhagim go against halacha pshuta brura. It's the greatest example of what I've spoken about 1,000 times over. The power of Am Yisrael. A holiday that the Jewish people, in their love for Torah, their love for tradition, their love for Mesorah, created a holiday that is second to none. We have tremendous halachic problems, but one day, like this year perhaps, Rakefet will get to Shayurim what the Chazal mean, the famous Yerushalmi, Minhag Mevatel Halacha, or Puk Chazi Mai Ama Deva, Brachat Daf Lamed He, Daf Mem He Amir Aleph. Or Imlo de Neviim Heim, Binei Neviim Heim, Psachim Samach Vav Amir Aleph. Simchas Torah, the greatest example. We choke halachically, we suffer halachically, but Am Yisrael has won out. Gentlemen, can you tell me the volume that is the classic volume on Simchas Torah? 600-700 pages of every source you want, constantly reprinted by Mossad Rav Kook. Avraham Ya'ari's volume. He wrote two tremendous research volumes, one on Simchas Torah and one on Shluchei Eretz Yisrael. So, you see, it's an unbelievable example where Am Yisrael invented a chag unto itself.
Also
you want another example? Another example? Hallel, Ligmarta Hallel, Pesach night. Wow. Whoever heard of that? Who dreamt of it? Who? What? When? Where? What does Hallel have to do? The Gemara says Hallel belongs to the Shachris, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. How do you dare say Hallel? Pesach night. And the story, I don't know how true it is, but I've heard it. It's written up that Rav Elvel, Brisker Rav's youngest son, was in Brisk growing up, teenager, and he walked by this Hasidic shul and they were singing Hallel so beautifully. And he came home and told Reb Chaim, "Oh, Tata, you should have heard the Hallel, beautiful, singing like angels." And Reb Chaim got angry at him. Brachat Labatala, what are they doing? Unheard of. And yet, I need not tell you, the majority of shuls say Hallel Pesach night. We'll talk about it in this tshuva. So let me reiterate. It's an emeritic tshuva. There's more to doing it, but wow, it has so much depth. Mendel, what did you want to ask?
Just based on the tshuva that was being cited earlier, it would sound like we just swear you would have a bunch of people come from Germany and set up shop somewhere, some city in Eretz Israel, and set up their own shul. So they should be allowed to put tefillin on within the context of only their own shul.
Well, you're right. In theory, you're absolutely right. But I'll tell you, what happened in Eretz Israel is, I would say, a miracle. That on this issue, there's uniformity. Everyone bent to the fact. I'll explain to you why. You want to know why? I'll give you Rakefet's reason. It's not halachic, it's sociological. I'll give you my reason. Many of you grew up in frum communities, all right? Five towns, Teaneck, Englewood, Pico Boulevard, Beverly Hills, Hancock Park. You take Toronto, the Byatt, what's it, Thornhill, what's it called? Beautiful area, then the area I was in, Clement Park, right? So many frum Jews. Nevertheless, on Chol HaMoed, you don't feel the Kedusha. People are running to work, people are davening early, people are running out of shul. I was once invited to a hotel on Pesach, I was the scholar in residence in Princeton. Tremendous crowd. I couldn't believe the crowd. Everyone Shomer Shabbos. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Wealthy people paying a fortune. This is before the crash. And I said, what's the secret of Princeton? The secret? Within walking distance of the hotel, or what it was really built by IBM for conferences, and it was rented out for Pesach, you had a railroad station, you get on the train, you're in mid-Manhattan within 20, 25 minutes. Everyone was going to work. You signed up the night before for a takeout lunch that they gave you as you left the premises. They gave you a carton, a little carton, with a takeout lunch. You don't feel the kedusha. Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, who works? People say we don't work all year. We certainly don't work on Chol HaMoed. The banks, 12 o'clock, they're closed. The stores, the food stores, open till 3, that's it, half a day. The Hasidim, everyone has a shtreimel on. The Kotel, over 1 million people came to the Kotel on Chol HaMoed the Sukkot. Birchat Kohanim, they say there were 70,000 people at the Kotel. The old city, I was there with my wife, we got up Mincha, we walked, the Kedusha is tangible. That's why they don't put on tefillin in Chol HaMoed, that's what I believe. It's not so much the halachic machloket, it's more the Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah that's reflected in an economic social reality. So wait, let me reiterate. I want to give out some things. So what did we do today? Oh, we did Hashemayim HaChadashim, Rav Tovi Dano, the meat on Tisha B'Av, and we started the tshuva of Rav Sitron. And he puts down this tremendous principle, and we're going to trace it throughout the tshuva. He's going to give us many examples that you can have one, more than one mincha concomitantly, and there's no isa of lo tikkun to. And then you'll see at the end, he gets into the husband and wife. I also mentioned that very issue we raised about the Torah being given in a certain context. So I mentioned that Rav Sabato and Rav Lichtenstein deal with it in relation to slavery. Very fascinating, the language. So suavdut, you know, as much as we can praise it and how beautiful the Jews treated their servants, but nevertheless, it's avdut. And this concept, it reflects what I said in class. Torah has to be given at a certain time. It's a certain society. It doesn't mean that that's the society we're going to have 10,000 years later. But the Torah Shabbat Peh and Mesorah and Am Yisrael enables us to live Torah in every society.
The same thing with the concept of a monarchy. Because yeah, when you study history, you see the kings were all people, not only the Jewish kings. Europe and France.
Oh, yeah, I would hate to think that the kings are all evil. We had Jewish kings, David Melech Yisrael, Shlomo Melech Yisrael, Chizkiyahu Melech Yisrael.
And then it all degenerated. The same thing with the Maccabim.
Nechateinu, Galina Matano, the Maccabim, they took too much. You listen, a human being is a human being. If you read, there's a website called Failed Messiah. If you read Failed Messiah, you walk away ripping Kriya. What have the Jewish people come to? Okay? I look today, I know someone they wrote about, I know two people they wrote about. What's the difference? All I can tell you is, if you look at it that way, you have to rip Kriya. Look at it the way Rakefet looks at it. That Baruch Hashem, look at these fine young men here studying Torah on the highest level and multiply this a million, hundreds of thousands of times over. Gentlemen, this is Rav Moshe Lichtenstein giving his shiur in B'nai Jesher and in memory of the Rav with some memorial for the Rav. Yitzchak, this is for you. This is the Tefillah Leman HaMedina, a whole huntress on the Tefillah.
You mean how it originated? With
and explaining every word. Gentlemen, if anyone is learning and wants this and will use it, it's yours. I'm giving away a lot of sperm. This is Tosfos HaRosh. When I was growing up, this was the Tosfos HaRosh that was available. It's on Masechet Yevamot in Ketuvot. This is the problem is it's the first part of it is old print and part of it is new print. This is Tosfos HaRosh on Masechet Gittin. This already is new print done in Israel, but there's new print here too. This is Shita Mekubetzet on the first part of Baba Kama. If you're going to learn Baba Kama, we're going to teach Baba Kama. This is on the first four prakim, and it's a valuable little sefer to have. Tomorrow we have a shir that is filled with topics that are second to none. Until we meet again, health and happiness, das vidanya. Can anyone tell me where Michael Wiseman is? Yeah.